Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Kevin Herr, Dave Ritchie, Buhner, Mark Lawrence, and now Sarah Bartlett.
I'm here. Wow, you've really got to work with everyone here at Sunbury Broadcasting today.
Now, it could be an accusation that I've burned everybody out and we've run through everybody.
There's nobody left on the bench. That's it.
The bench is empty.
If Sarah has to leave for any reason whatsoever, including just leaving here screaming in the next hour, Steve, we're in deep trouble. We may have to go to the pickle bar.
Barty, you're going to have to log some innings if we go extras. All right?
Oh, man. All right. I can take it. I think I can do this.
Well, it's going to be a baseball half hour, and this show being brought to you by our good friend at friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're going to add another name into the mix, Brian Tripp, who helps us out so much from time to time. He had a chance to talk with the Phillies broadcaster Tom McCarthy down at Clearwater. And the first question he asked him about is the natural one. How is Ryan Howard?
Honestly, I think those guys are great. They're playing every day. In fact, Ryan has indeed played every day. You know, Ryan's been out in the starting lineup, whether it be home or road. And I think the goal, which was to give him confidence that his Achilles was healed and also to get him some at-bats, has really paid off. And Chase has been fantastic. You know, he's hit by a pitch by Washington Nationals pitcher Steven Strasburg on Wednesday, and he's fine. I mean, his knees are fine. I think one of the things that stands out about Chase is if you watch him during batting practice or when he's taking infield, I mean, he's not holding back at all. And he's not holding back in the games either, but I think that's one thing. But the extra stuff outside of the games is where he really is, it really is working his tail off, and I think that's a good thing to see.
The other injury question coming into 2013, of course, is the health of Roy Halladay, one of the Phillies' three ace pitchers. Had an opportunity to watch your telecast yesterday. I thought Roy Halladay looked very good. I know Chris Wheeler was very impressed with his changeup during the broadcast and during his outing yesterday. What's your perspective so far on how Halladay's been?
I think he looks good. I do think that there's still, you know, he's still not going to be the pitcher he was, let's say, 3 years ago. But I still think what he is now is certainly good enough. I still think he can win in game, which is for 7 years. He kept them off balance in his last start against the Nationals, you know, with his changeup. His fastball, I guess the highest it was yesterday, according to scouts, and we don't get the radar. We know after the game what he throws was like 89 miles an hour. Now, that's still a little low for him, but they feel like he's working toward a higher velocity, which is a good thing. So I think, knock on wood, at this point, I think he's been pretty effective. He's happy with it, and I think he's pretty honest with the way he feels, with the way he feels he pitched last year and the way he is this spring. And I think as long as he is feeling good with it, I think all of us should feel good with it too.
He was also fairly honest talking with Tom McCarthy, voice of the Phillies. He was also fairly honest about a pitch that slipped yesterday. What did you think about that, sending a message perhaps to Tyler Moore in a spring training game?
Well, I thought he definitely let him know that they weren't happy that Chase Utley was hit. And I thought that was fine. I mean, I think that's part of it. You know, by saying that it slipped, by being sort of evasive about it, I mean, you never want to be as honest as Cole was last year. Because Major League Baseball is obviously always listening and watching, but I thought it was appropriate. It happened. You know, your guy gets hit, so you go after one of their guys. Now they didn't have anybody in the lineup yesterday that they could pinpoint, like a Bryce Harper or something like that. But it was okay to go after one of their guys. To be honest with you, I thought it was one of those things that was warranted from a baseball standpoint. I mean, mm-hmm. he didn't hit him, but he also didn't go after his head either.
From watching the Phillies so far this spring, and of course this is just from an outsider's perspective, they look like they have a bit of a chip on their shoulder, that they're ready to reestablish themselves at least to the Nationals, to the Braves, as the top dog in the National League East. Is that something that you see in camp on a day-to-day basis?
Absolutely. I think they're comfortable. I think they're confident. I think they're healthy. I think they like the fact that they're kind of under the radar right now. But I think that they're also relaxed. I mean, it's much more of a confident camp than it was a year ago because of the health of the guys. And I think that is something that really stands out when you watch them. You know, I like to sit and watch the drills that are going on around the games themselves. And they're laughing a lot. I mean, the clubhouse is in good shape right now. They've added some really good clubhouse guys and Ben Revere and Michael Young. And I think that helps a little bit too. And Mike Adams as well.
And with Mike Adams, one of the things last year, of course, talking with Tom McCarthy, TV voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, one of the things last year, they blew a lot of games late. Jonathan Papelbon, they couldn't get it to Jonathan Papelbon. How's the bullpen set up this year with Mike Adams, with Jonathan Papelbon in the back end, but also reacquiring a guy like Chad Durbin for sixth and seventh innings?
Yeah, I know Chad gave up a couple runs against the Nationals on Wednesday, but I still think he's going to be fine. I think Adams really changes the entire complexion of this bullpen. Brian, last year, eight games where they had two outs and the lead in the eighth inning, and they blew those leads. Let's say if Mike's here, let's say if they won six of those games, you know, that's 87 wins. Let's say the 13 games they blew, that the bullpen blew, with Papelbon and other relievers in there, let's say, and that's in the eighth inning included too, let's say, and that's before two outs, let's say they win 10 of those games. Mm-hmm. Well, then that's 91 wins. So it's a totally different season if the bullpen was better last year, I think, anyway.
And that's with a team that had injuries much of the season as well, to find out that they'd still have an opportunity to be in that position. It speaks to the strength of the starting pitching as well. The starting pitching is obviously one of the foundations of the team. How well, though, do you like the team's balance at this point in terms of offense? And defense was something that was always very good from 2007 to 2011. But this year, questions, of course, at third base and maybe in the corner outfield positions.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think that the potential for balance is definitely there. But I think, you know, left field and right field, I think, are concerning at this point. Although Dominic Brown's having a really good spring, and I think he'll garner one of those positions. But I think that until we know who's in left field, who's in right field, if there's a platoon, then it'll be tough to see, you know, whether the balance is there from a lineup standpoint. And I also think you have to wait for Carlos to get back off his suspension as well. And that's a key, because he's an important piece to any puzzle, in particular this one from an offensive standpoint.
What about Delmon Young when he comes back from injury? What's his timetable right now, and what could he bring to the table?
Well, I think that they're sort of cautiously optimistic right now with him, just because of of the ankle injury. He was cleared to do a little bit more yesterday by the doctors in California, so he's starting to take batting practice. He's also starting to, as of next week, run on flat ground. Ruben was saying that by the time spring training comes to a close, that if he progresses properly, he'll start playing games. So that means that he's probably not going to be ready for playing in the big leagues until the middle of April, maybe the end of April. They said they're going to be really cautious with them and very conservative with them. I thought that honestly was pretty good, because then it doesn't leave anybody with expectations that he'll be around at the start of the season, but that he will be around eventually. As long as he's in shape, I think you'll see him in right field once he's healthy and once he's back with the Phillies. And that's it. He won't play left field. He won't play anywhere else. He will play right field, and that's the only thing.
Tom McCarthy, voice of the Phillies, the interview courtesy of our friends at WHVL over across town. And now it seems like, Tom, that Darren Ruff is probably going to start the year in AAA.
You know, I'm still torn by that, Bri. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do agree with you that there's a pretty good chance that happens. And I think it's more because of his defense than it is his offense, to get him more reps in left field. But you know what? There's still 3 weeks left in spring training. There's a good chance that he stays with the team for those entire 3 weeks. And let's say he turns it on offensively, it may change his confidence level defensively, because he's adjusted to a number of different things. And I think we kind of underestimated that at the start of spring training. So I agree with you. I think right now, felt differently last week, but I mm-hmm. think if you ask me right now, 3 weeks before, or 3.5 weeks before the start of the season, where he'd be, I would say yes, he'd probably be in AAA. But I could change in 10 days. I mean, he could have some kind of a renaissance defensively and offensively that would lead me to believe he's going to be the everyday left fielder to start the season.
Is that one of the things about this extended spring training, because of the World Baseball Classic, guys have an extra opportunity to show themselves?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, and I think it also causes you to pause a little bit on let's say a Dominic Brown, because even Dominic said this the other day. He goes, "Let me play the entire spring. Don't let me play just 10 days. Let me show what I'm doing in this entire spring training." And I think that's important too, is to understand that this is long. I mean, in a week they could, let's say they go 0-10. I mean, that brings their entire batting average down, or they go 7-11. That brings their batting average up, and it does change the perspective of what kind of spring they're having.
Also like to get your take on the World Baseball Classic. Is that something that's going to be around for a while, in your opinion, or is this still already losing interest?
Well, I think it is going to be around, because I think baseball wants it around. I do think that they have to tinker with it in some way, shape, or form. You know, how? I don't know, because if you play it at the end of the year, then, you're not going to get all of the great players, because you probably can't play it after the World Series, because mm-hmm. if you do that, then there's certain players that are going to be dormant for about 5 or 6 weeks. So it's tough, particularly from a pitcher standpoint, to charge them back up again.
Plus, a lot of guys are getting their surgeries at the end of the year, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It could be like the Pro Bowl in the NFL, where you don't have everybody that you want because of the Super Bowl and because of, guys just backing out. So I don't know when the right time to do it, but I do think it will be around, even if it's in a different form, or even if it continues to be somewhat of a diminished form where not all the best players play in it, because I think baseball likes it. I mean, look at what was going on over in Japan. I mean, I realized that when Cuba played Brazil, nobody was at the game, but, when Japan or Korea or any of the teams from the Far East played in their homeland, the place was packed. And I think that's part of how they want to broaden the game internationally.
Hey, Tom, before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't get a couple questions in about college basketball. Obviously, you call a lot of college basketball games. Do you ever remember a season quite like this?
No, not even a little bit. I mean, I thought 2 years ago we had somewhat of a similar season, but not like this. Villanova winning last night, and getting the 7 seed in the Big East and picking up another upset, that was a big deal. The fact that on any given day, if you just look at the Atlantic 10, that anybody in the Atlantic 10 can win the conference and also go through the Sweet 16, they're that good. The parity is unbelievable, and I think the fact that Gonzaga is number one right now is a clear indication of that parity. I don't think they're going to win the national championship, but they certainly have had a very nice regular season. But it also shows that, this could be a year where a mid-major like a VCU or a Butler or a Gonzaga wins the national championship, and I don't think anybody would blink at it.
Tom McCarthy, the television voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, joining our Brian Tripp. We'll come back. I'll talk with Steve Blass and give you the Pirates' point of view in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout. With so many great deals in bloom, you'll be thinking spring. Like a 2004 Volvo XC40 four-door twin turbo with four-wheel drive. Lowest price promise, $9,994. A 2006 BMW X3 four-door four-wheel drive, $14,299. 2008 Ford Escape four-wheel drive V6 limited, only $15,988. 2012 Hyundai Elantra four-door sedan GLS, just $15,943. A 2012 Hyundai Veloster three-door coupe with black interior. Call for a price, 888-536-8017. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Okay, from Clearwater, we go to Bradenton now. Get the Pirates' point of view. Steve Blass has been associated with the Pirates for 54 seasons, including being the Game 7 winning pitcher with a complete game against the Baltimore Orioles in 1971. And, Steve, we look at spring training, the importance of it. I've often talked that it's usually rosters spots 21 through 25 you're looking at. Is that a good way to look at it when you look at spring training?
Well, it's individual situations, Steve, for individual teams in terms of their needs. There might be a situation where you've traded one of your high-profile guys, so it's a lower number. Say you've traded a quality third baseman, so it's not going to be in that 21 to 25 range. But many, many times it is. Many times you come to spring training with a fairly set roster. You might not present it that way to the media or to the public, but you've got a pretty good idea what's going to happen, with the exception of trades and or injuries. So when you look at the Pittsburgh Pirates situation, you're looking at a couple roster situations. You're looking at a couple of spots in your starting rotation. You've got A.J. Burnett. You've got Wandy Rodriguez and Jeff Carstens. And then after that, you're looking at Jeff Locke and Kyle McPherson for candidates. Locke is going to pitch today against the Red Sox. A couple of utility infield spots because you've got Alvarez, Barmas, Walker, and then Jones and Sanchez. So that's that takes care of the infield. So that takes care of an extra guy with the roster, with the situation of Jones and Sanchez. And then a crowded outfield, but it's pretty good crowd in the outfield in that you have some quality decisions to make rather than say, okay, I've got to settle for somebody. So this spring training for the Pirates, fairly well set with the extra guys in the infield, the extra guys in the outfield. You got your two catchers set. So not a lot of opportunities, but that's this year. Other years it could be different.
Right. You mentioned Kyle McPherson battling for a possible spot in the rotation. An interesting guy who made a couple of trips into State College during the course of his career and then all of a sudden seemed to just catch fire. Does that usually happen with that you see with some prospects, that the light just goes on and things fall into place for them?
I think it's more so with pitchers, Steve. That's the case with the McPherson. All of a sudden you figure out you get that sense, the kind of a gut sense many times rather than finding a mystery pitch that, okay, this is how you want to go. This is what you want to read on the previous pitch. This is what you get a feel for pitching, and it's a vague term. You get it, but you saw that with McPherson, and so that's candidate. And again, you see it more with pitchers. I think more hitters, it's a progression. They can hit, and they're just refining things. So he's a candidate along with Jeff Locke, who's pitching today down in Fort Myers. And you know there's not the possibility distinctly that it's going to be one or the other. It could be both of them. So I root for pitchers. I root for young pitchers. I know what it's like to go through in spring training thinking, all right, who's hurt? Who are the veterans? How much time do they have left? How much of a chance do I have? So I kind of root for young pitchers that are in those kind of scenarios.
Steve, you work with some really good catchers in the course of your career. What can a Russell Martin mean for this, not just the team, but also for the staff?
Well, it's a confidence thing. Rod Barajas did a good job, but he kind of ran out of gas. Russell Martin has a pedigree of knowing how to call a game, how to work with pitchers. Many times you're kind of a psychologist. Do you go out and get in his face, or do you put your arm around him and kind of nudge him along? So he has the reputation of being that kind of guy. He throws well to second base. We need a lot of help with our game against base stealers. Not that it's his total responsibility. I'm a pitcher that thinks it's 90% the pitcher's fault. Right. But, he's a plus. He's an upgrade, and he's coming in. Not just young pitchers, but anybody that's been around. Okay, here's a guy coming in. We don't have to be concerned. We don't have to wonder if he's good. We know he's good in back of the plate.
Also in spring training, usually through instructors, a lot of teams bring in players from days gone by that, you know, are winning tradition. You and I both know that the Pirates until 2019 has great a winning tradition, buddy. How important is it to have winners around young players?
Oh, it's good. We've got a bunch. You know, we've got Mazeroski, Hall of Famer, and it's not just his work with Neil Walker. Guys talk to him in the clubhouse. They get a sense of professionalism from a guy like Maz and Colby and Manny Sanguian and Mike LaValliere. So it's not just a matter of them being decorations. Many times we hear about the old Yankees that used to come around to their spring training camp, and they'd kind of stand around and tell stories. And that's okay. That part of it's okay. But I think you got guys that are involved down here with the Pirates, and that's a plus. You know, the stories are good, but also their presence is a plus for this camp. And I see it when I go down to broadcast a game. I see those guys talking. And, you know, no matter how a conversation starts with a Bill Mazeroski or a Bill Verdon or a Ken Tekulve, it's good. It's good for them to hear their thoughts, the way they present themselves, their professionalism. It might help them with how they deal with the media. So, yeah, plus deal to have those kind of guys around.
Steve, the last 2 years, the Pirates took it deep into July 2 years ago. Last year, they took it deep into August. So they understand. I think there's an understanding of how to win. Have you seen that breakthrough mentally about how to win despite what may have happened in September?
Yeah, I do. I think the thing is, you know, you talk about confidence and success. I think to really have true confidence, you can think you're good, but then if you have success, you've proven to yourself you're good. So they have proven that they're capable of competing at this level with the teams in the National League and some interleague stuff. So they just got to extend it, because at the end of a season, any season, it's not when you lose games, not when you win games, you just add them up at the end. So they've got to realize it's 6 months, not just a 4 month season. And it's the same old thing. You've got everybody in the big leagues is capable of either hitting a home run or pitching a shutout. It's the guys that do it most often, and most often includes not just in a month or a week. It's the whole season. Who does it most often? And they've got to find a way to extend it, and that's the talent level. Some guys are not capable of doing it for 6 months. We've got to make sure we've got the right guys that can.
That is Steve Blass, 54 seasons as part of the Pirate organization, and, of course, for the last couple of decades on their broadcast team with the Pittsburgh Pirates. We thank him for joining us today from Bradenton, Florida. So we're giving you the Phillies with Tommy McCarthy. We're giving you the Pirates with Steve Blass. In the final half hour, Funer. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
And the pickle bar.
Brewers, you better believe it.
Garlic gherkins.
I understand it. Well, garlic gherkins taste great. But it sounded to me like you slept in the guest room.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. It's the weekend. Time to stock up on snacks, beverages, and pickles.
Gotta love the hot tomatoes. It's a little bit of a variation, Steve, off the pickles. Delicious. Absolutely stunning.
Also in the Sunbury Motors studio, where Ken Scherto was earlier today, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Next up on our list is the Hilshire's General Store Hotline. We've called out on that today as well. Talking with Steve Blass, Tommy McCarthy, powered by Hilshire's General, 7 Miles Group, and 5th. Go to www.hilshirestore.com. We're now going to get everybody up to date on the sports news of the day. I'll start national, and then Bob will give us an update on the PIAAs. First of all, golf. At one point, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson were tied for the lead at Doral, but now it's Tiger through 12 at 12 under par. Former U.S. Open champ Graham McDowell is one shot back. He has finished his round. He shot a 5 under par today. He's 11 under for the tournament, a shot back of Woods. Steve Stricker is now playing 18. He's at 10 under par. And Phil Mickelson is playing 18. He is at 9 under par. Also, Bubba Watson is playing 18 and is at 9 under par. What a leaderboard they have at Doral. Let's go to Major League Baseball, get you up to date on what's happening in Florida and in Arizona. First of all, Tampa Bay beat the Phillies 3-2. All the runs were scored today in the third inning. The Phils roughed up David Price just a bit, but still Tampa Bay won it 3-2. Marlins beat the Yankees 6-1. The Cardinals over the Nationals 16-10. Atlanta beat Houston 14-0. Toronto down St. Louis 7-1. Tied the Mets 3-2. The Dodgers over the Giants 4-0, while Arizona and the Angels are 1-1. Coming up tonight, it's going to be the Pirates and the Orioles at McKechnie Field down in Bradenton. And at JetBlue Park, it'll be the Red Sox and the Twins in Fort Myers. Also, coming up tomorrow, it's going to be Bucknell basketball in the Patriot semifinals against Army, trying to get to the Patriot League championship game. That'll be tomorrow afternoon. Get out there for that. minutes away from the NCAA tournament, and they're trying to get there on their home floor. They do it a step at a time. Army is next. Nittany Lion basketball, they've won two of their last three games. Beat Northwestern last night, 66-59. 22nd-ranked Wisconsin here Sunday. That will be at noon. And remember, it's noon Eastern Daylight Time. Bob, what about the PIAAs in Hershey?
Well, tonight going into the semifinals, Steve, of the AA, nine District 4 wrestlers, all kids from this immediate area of WKOK, are in the semifinals. It's a showcase of incredible talent. You heard Ken Sheertow talk to you earlier about one of those wrestlers, Zane Rutherford of Benton. He has two pins so far in the tournament, 1 minute 33, 1 minute 36. He is 43-0 at 138. He gets a fellow from Brookville who's 34-4. In the other bracket is Seth Lansbury from Line Mountain, just down the river from Sunbury. Lansbury's 37-4, wrestles a fellow from Sharon, who is 35-3. Now, here's the interesting thing, Steve, at this weight class. Rutherford transferred from Line Mountain to Benton, had to sit out a year when he did so. And who does he face? Another Line Mountain kid. Could be two Line Mountain kids, in one sense, in the finals at 138. 145, teammate of Rutherford, Colt Cotton from Benton, 42-5. He goes against a kid from Chartiers, Houston, which is just south of Pittsburgh, 44-6. 152, really a kid who is just tough as nails, pound for pound. Ryan Price of Milton, 31-4 on the season, goes against Austin Matthews of Reynolds, who has the unremarkable record of 47-1 at 152. 160, local fella is Ty Walter. He had been a medal winner before, his sophomore year. He comes in with about a 35-3 record at least. He will wrestle Cody Law from Forest Hills, which is in South Central PA, who comes in 32-0. And then we go up to 182, Troy Hemberry of Muncie, 41-1. He faces a fellow from Brandywine Heights, which is in suburban Philadelphia, Adam Mackus, who is 38-1. 41-1 and 38-1 in the semis at 182. Now we get to 195. Ryan Solomon has not given up 1 point in sectionals, districts, regionals, and now in states. He's had two decisions, 10-0 and 7-0, which is out of sorts for him because he pinned everybody else through sectionals, districts, and regionals. 38-0 goes against Zach Croyle, who's 30-11 from out in Katanning, which is about 40 miles north of Pittsburgh. Ryan Solomon, the defending state champion, and he's headed to Pitt. At 220, a local favorite and a Penn State football run-on, Brandon Smith, 35-1, and his only loss was to Solomon, I believe. He will wrestle Jake Temple of Avella, which is on the west side of Pittsburgh, 39-1. So 35-1 and 39-1 at 220. A couple fellas still alive. Kent Lane from over in Southern Columbia. He's a sophomore. He was undefeated going into states. He lost. He's still alive in the third round consolations. Cole Walters at 132 from Mifflinburg, younger brother of Ty Walter. He is alive in the third round consolation, as is Blake Marks at 152. He's a Southern Columbia freshman. He's alive, and one of the biggest stunners of the whole tournament, Steve, at heavyweight, the defending state champion, Nazir Mironenko from Mifflinburg. He lost in the quarterfinals 6-2, so he dropped down into the consolations, and he was ruled out by disqualification in the consolation round. So the defending state champ at heavyweight, who I thought had a real good chance to repeat, is out. So District 4, 9 in the semifinals that start a little later tonight. A great showing, obviously. Take any one of those 9, and you have about 4 to 5 state champions out of the 14 weight classes.
Great update, Bob. Great update.
And, you know, I'll be over 4:30 on tomorrow afternoon over at Bison Land. That's going to be a good game.
Army is a much improved team, much better offensive team than they were
Two months ago, maybe.
2 years. I mean, well, no, they were a good offensive team back. They were a good offensive team back when I saw them in December, Bob.
Okay.
But I think they're a better defensive team now. I think that's really helped them. I think their defense when I saw them was mediocre back in December, but their offense was really good, and the Ellis kid can really play.
Well,
Ellis can flat out play.
He was really stymied when Army came down to Soika in the I think it was the first time in when they played home and away. They really held him in check, but then in the second half he kind of got his 16, 17 points. But the first half he might have had two, but he can light it up from anywhere, kind of like a C.J. McCollum. Quiet, and the next thing you know, he's got 10 in a row.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not quite as explosive as McCollum. As McCollum's a special talent, but I look at Army and I see a team that's better defensively, that already has really good flow offensively, but if Bucknell keeps holding teams to 40 points in the 40s, they're going to win every game. They've got enough offense, but you hold teams in the 42 to 50 point range, you win.
And you know,
it comes down to defense.
And again, against Navy on Wednesday night, Navy was very lucky to get 40 points. Dave Paulson kind of cleared the bench there in the last 7 minutes of the game, and Navy got a few points there, but they could have easily been at 35 points for a 40 minute game. And the defense was, as you can imagine, stifling by the Bison. They had a little trouble offensively, but they Navy played them very tough. Ed DeCellis, as you indicated, when we were talking about the Navy game, they came to play tough defense, and they really put the old sleeper hold on a lot of the Bucknell players, where they were not really moving much at all. So, good job by DeChellis. He just has a team that can't score.
Well, I mean, that's the whole key right there. It's, I say it comes down to defense. Defense and guard play. A guy like Muscala opens up things for the guards. But your guards, when we talk about postseason play and guard play, here's the reason why we talk about it. Number one, which players on the floor hand the ball the majority of the time? Guards. Getting the ball up the floor, getting you into the right offense, getting the flow going for your team. Now, it may go into the post to a guy like Mike, and then he kicks it back out. But, again, the guard runs the show. Also, defensively, your first line of defense are your guards. If they can't get past your guards, or they're playing really good perimeter defense, your guard play means a lot at this time of the year. Bucknell is really good guard play. And obviously they have not just a good post, but Mike's a great player. I mean, Mike's legitimately a great player. And I've seen a lot of really good post players this year. Okay, I've seen Cody Zeller in person twice. I saw Jared Sullinger four times in his career. I saw A.J. Hammonds in person twice this year. He was a good young post player. I keep going through. Like, Jared Bergeron is a veteran for Wisconsin, very, very good. Adrian Payne from Michigan State, right? I mean, I've seen all these guys, all right? I mean, I've seen all these guys so far this year. Mike is as good as any of them because he brings a different skill set to the table because he can play with his back to the basket. He also can face the basket. And not only that, Mike is not just a good free throw shooter. He's a great free throw shooter. So if you want to just run an inbounds play late where you want to get the ball inbounds and say, look, we'll take a foul, because he is, 6'11", you can get the ball into him on a high pass with the confidence that, A, he'll catch it because he has really good hands, and, B, he'll go to the free throw line and knock them both down. That is a luxury, having a big man who's a really good free throw shooter. It's a luxury that you cannot put a price on. He's an excellent rebounder and just a really good, he's just a well-rounded player. He's probably the best rounded center I've seen. Now Cody Zeller's quicker. Right? I'll just tell you straight out. Cody Zeller is quicker than Mike. But Mike's a little more polished around the basket than Cody Zeller is. And he's a better free throw shooter than Cody Zeller is. They're both comparable as rebounders. And they're comparable as post passers, but Zeller is without question quicker. I mean, when you see Zeller in person, you are surprised at first at the speed and quickness he brings to the floor.
And Mike Muscala, what was so impressive before they tipped it off Wednesday night against Navy, the commissioner of the Patriot League came out and presented the awards for the most valuable player in the league, for the best defensive player in the league, and the scholar athlete in basketball in the league. And, gee, it happened to go to the same guy, Mike Muscala, all three awards. That has to be unprecedented. And not only that, but Mike leads the nation, or is it tied, in the number of double-doubles he's had this season. This right. is a great joy for basketball mm-hmm. fans to be able to watch the talent of a rather humble fella to boot.
Yeah. I mean, the award from 2 years ago is still in his locker.
Yes.
But I'm telling you, as somebody who has seen lot of quality post players in person. I'll give you a good example. Myers Leonard is now playing for the Portland Trail Blazers. Okay, mm-hmm. He played last year at Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Mike's a better player.
Well, I think a lot of NBA scouts are thinking similar things.
Mike's a better player. Now, obviously, on a day-in and day-out basis, I mean, let's be straight now, okay? Let's be mm-hmm. very – it's wrong – you know how I feel about getting honest and direct appraisals, because I think you'd cheat the fans if you don't.
Sure.
All right. Cody Zeller, Adrian Payne, A.J. Hammonds, and before that a guy like Jared or whatever, they, on a day-in and day-out basis, play better competition.
Certainly.
Okay? It's just, I mean, this is the Big Ten. And there are some years, as I mentioned, the Big Ten may be the fifth best conference. Well, I've never seen it like that. Some years where the Big Ten's like the third best conference, sometimes they're second. This time, this year, everyone knows the Big Ten is the best conference in the country. It just turns out, because right now, I mean, look at these guys. It's like eating their young the way they're going at each other right now. But Mike Muscala is an individual player. When I look at him, has three-letter league talent. We'll come back and wrap it up in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Doctors, hospitals.
Time to wrap it up for today. I think we've had a wide-ranging show. Where Dave Ritchie.
He is now hitchhiking on the side of Interstate 81, hoping to get to Abington Heights by 7:06.
You know, I would like to have Kevin understand something. I mean, I know that as the play-by-play voice of Shikellamy, he feels obviously very important. But I'd like to point out something that usually in the situations I've been in, and I don't know about you, Bob, I'm sure you can concur with this, but the police escort is in front of you and not in back of you with the lights blurry.
That's always, you got to make sure you get the police escort in the right order. This is exactly right. And
if it's in back of you, it's, you know, no offense, but the ad council says that's a bad sign.
It is a bad sign, and usually means somebody will come up and say, "Can I see your license, registration, and insurance, please?"
And Richie rolls his eyes and looks at Kevin and says, "Hand it over."
You just,
But that's tonight. IWO, Shikellamy, and Abington Heights at 7 o'clock tonight here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So we've had Dave Ritchie, Kevin Herron about that game today. We had Ken Schurz on the movement to change the mindset of the International Olympic Committee when it comes to wrestling in the 2020 Olympic Games. We followed that up with Tommy McCarthy from Clearwater discussing the Philadelphia Phillies spring training so far. Followed that up with Steve Blass, the analyst of the Pittsburgh Pirates in Bradenton, telling us about how the Pirates spring training is going so far. And then Bob and I gave you and Bob in particular, Bob was the one that gave you the complete rundown on what's going with the PIAA Wrestling Championship. So I think we've covered about every base you can think of today. Plus, we talked about Bucknell and Penn State basketball.
Well, I've got two quickies for you before we run out of time. Penn State, Wisconsin, Sunday noon. I know you'll be there. Will Bo Ryan be there? Will they make it in from Wisconsin?
Oh, they should have no problem. It's going to be beautiful here. It's going to be 53 degrees.
Exactly.
It's going to be nice tomorrow. Bo's coming home. Bo, of course, played high school basketball for Ron Rainey, a Penn State basketball graduate. Ron Rainey was his coach at Chester High School.
Right.
And, of course, Chester, the great power in Pennsylvania right now. Then when Ron Rainey took the head basketball coaching job at Wilkes in Wilkes-Barre, his point guard was Bo Ryan. So Bo has very deep roots and also a deep affinity for Penn State because of his association all those many years, 8 years altogether with Ron Rainey. And so he's coming back home to Pennsylvania. But he also has a team that, while being ranked 22nd in the country, and it is always a tough out, especially in the style they play, they're not shooting the ball well right now. They've lost their last two games to Purdue and Michigan State, respectively. Purdue was the shocker because that was at Cole Fieldhouse. They don't lose at Cole Fieldhouse, let alone to a team that at the moment is in the bottom half of the standings in the Big Ten. That just doesn't happen that often to Wisconsin to Cole. Then they went to Michigan State last night. It was just another one of those football and wood games.
Yes.
Where you just look at it and go, I mean,
they couldn't find the basket.
Down.
Yeah.
Well, it's 10 minutes into the game, and Dick and I were doing score updates on the Penn State Sports Network, and it was 10-6 Michigan State. And I looked over at Dick. I said, they're on a 40-24 pace.
Yes, exactly.
Well, it ended up being 58-43. But here's something interesting. And just to let you know that we may have started our little research here. Wisconsin, in pure road games this season, does not have a single player averaging in double figures in road games.
Yeah, they're a team that kind of likes it in the 50s, though, don't they? I mean,
they grinded it. Look, Bo Ryan is a brilliant coach, and Bo Ryan knows how to win, and Bo Ryan knows how to find personnel to buy into how he knows they need to win. But at the same time, that style of basketball is bad for the game.
Yeah.
It's great for Bo, and it's great for Wisconsin. Look, and he has to do that. That's how he needs to win, okay? So let's I'm not being derogatory toward Bo at all, because he's doing exactly what he needs to do to win, and he's brilliant at it and brilliant in getting people convinced that's how you play to win games. That's how Wisconsin's won a ton of games. But overall, when you look at the big picture of college basketball, it's not good for the game. You want flow in a game and passing and good shooting and so forth, and games that are played out in the 70s and sometimes the 80s. You got Duke and North Carolina tomorrow night. I'll tell you right now, Bob, North Carolina, game's gonna, that's not going to be a game in the 50s.
No, they're going to ring it up. They're going to ring it up.
But it's fun to watch that.
It is. And Penn State women, where are they ranked, and what's up next for them?
They're ranked eighth right now. They play tonight against Ohio State, the Big Ten quarterfinals out at the Allstate Arena in Hoffman Estates, the old Rosemont Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
They will play there tonight at 7 o'clock. It's a dangerous game. Penn State beat the Lady Penn State, State the 15. But it is one last night and playing so much better, so it's a dangerous game. Bob, as always, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
My good friend, it's always great to spend time with you. Great job you always do.
See
for Kevin Herr, I'm Steve Jones. Today's show has been brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Our thanks to Mark Lawrence and Sarah Bartlett for stepping in and doing the great work they
your
always do.
Your station for news.